Hello, and welcome to the Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Season 1, Episode 10 of Scream Queens, entitled Thanksgiving.
Now that's a nice, simple one. I can't make that one scary.
I was literally prepared to make fun of you for making a stupid, spooky related noise.
But I think I can make Black Friday scary. That's a scary holiday. People like attack each other for sales and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, get ready.
It's gonna be spooky. Yeah, that's the name of next week's episode.
All right. So spoiler warning on Thanksgiving and everything before it. And what did you think of Thanksgiving?
As usual, I hated rewatching it.
But you liked it the first time, right?
But I liked it the first time. I know. It's just, that's always the first thing that comes to my mind because, you know, obviously when you rewatch, that is more, you know, that's more recent than the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw it, I really liked it. I thought it had some interesting things going on that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Definitely some of the stuff with just kind of the chronological order, like how they chose to insert the commercial breaks and how they chose to cut away. I thought it was really creative what they had. I thought it fit together nicely.
Yeah. I would say that I thought this was a really, really fun episode. So this is one of the ones I liked much more. At the same time, I do agree with you that rewatching it, it was not the easiest thing. And I think that I've been trying to figure out why, because I really, honestly, thoroughly enjoyed watching it the first time, and I thought it was really fun and funny, and I think that it's just that a lot of, like, Murphy humor is, like, sensationalist or, like, shock value-based, and so, like, it doesn't always hit home as much on a rewatch, and instead you notice the annoying bits more.
Very fair.
Yeah, and because there honestly always is annoyingness to some degree because of how heightened and shrill and unlikable the characters are purposely, but when you already know the jokes, you just notice, oh, this character is kind of annoying.
Yeah, that's not to say that there are a lot of moments that I actually can appreciate more on the rewatch because, you know, they might be, like you said, it's so heightened, so these kind of more subtle jokes and lines, they can get swept up in the drama or melodrama, I should say. And then watching it a second time when I'm bored of the melodrama, I might actually focus in on the one-liners.
Yeah. And there were a lot. I think this was overall a very solidly funny episode with a lot of great one-liners. Also two big twists. And I think we're both going to sort of talk about how, in some ways, this show probably could have been 10 episodes. It's kind of spinning its wheels. There are still big things that happen in this episode. You can't say this is a filler episode.
Absolutely not. This was far from a filler episode. I'm very pleased, actually, with the amount of movement we got and just everything that was established.
Yeah.
I love the fact that everybody was reunited at the end. I really appreciate that we saw everybody in that one scene.
Yeah. Besides Denise, who for some reason is missing.
Oh, crap, I forgot about Denise. Right, that was weird. That was something I forgot to mention.
Yeah, let's just kind of get that out of the way.
Yeah, they just don't even talk about Denise. Like, there's not even a throwaway line of, like, Denise went to her sister's house for Thanksgiving or something.
It's particularly strange to me when they're in this episode, they're trying to build up, like, we're a family, that she was, like, the one who wanted to be the house mother, who wanted to be the leader of the Chanels, and she's not. And not only was this, well, just an inconvenient episode for her to be gone in general, but to not even mention her was not great.
But I don't know if we had room for Denise's personality, though.
I agree. I mean, as far as, like, time frame, yes, it was probably a smart move, and we just got a lot of her last week. But as far as just, like, the world, the show making sense, it just felt odd that she was gone.
No, I absolutely agree. And that's the thing. Like, when Denise is there, I like her.
Yeah.
But she's pretty forgettable.
I don't know if forgettable is the term that I would pick.
Well,
but
she's not very consequential.
Yeah, unneeded, necessary, beyond just comedic relief. As far as for moving the plot forward, she hasn't been integral in quite a while.
Right.
Yeah. So, this episode was written by Brad Falchuk, and it's not doing great in the ratings, guys. This is its lowest yet, I believe. 1.9,
I saw. It didn't even hit 2.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, not including DVR, of course. Yeah. So you actually looked into it, and something about, like, Fox isn't going to be just publishing their pure TV ratings anymore.
Yeah, so I heard about this on a podcast, so I didn't, like, read the specifics, but I heard that Fox isn't going to... So I don't know when this is starting. It might be starting next season, for all I know. But they're not going to be promoting their last night's ratings for this. Instead, they're going to be doing it more on... the night it aired plus 3 days of DVR so that you get those DVR things in there more, and so that's being more focused on, because they always do, like all the networks nowadays do, like live plus however many days to show how the DVR helps it, but nobody really cares at that point. Like, people pay attention to the first ratings you give them, and so I think this is a smart move, especially for a network that is not, you know, all the networks are struggling in some ways.
Yes. Yeah,
but this is the reason we always bring this up. Of course, is does it get a season 2? And I do want to point out this is Thanksgiving week. I think that probably is part of why the ratings went down. A lot of shows aren't even on that week.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that they were showing an episode Thanksgiving week. Yeah, I know that it doesn't fall over Thanksgiving weekend itself, but I don't know. People travel and just.
I think it's specifically because it was a Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, but I just mean that's just not going to help their cause ratings. There's a reason a lot of shows that I would say are pretty consequential and like really bank on people watching them, they skip Thanksgiving week.
I mean, I watched a lot of shows on CW, and I think like all of them just took the week off. Like, the CW basically just took the week off.
Yeah.
So
shows only really kind of return on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll come. We'll talk about the ratings next week when we have a better idea. But mm-hmm. We're going chronologically again. We've found our rhythm, I suppose, and just doing the most obvious way of doing it was the way to go.
I mean, it's very difficult. Like I said, the way things are intercut, it's just not really possible to go character by character anymore.
Yeah. You left a bullet point here before we get into the specifics of the episode. Something I was talking to you about that's kind of a general thing that a takeaway from this episode, which is how... All these characters, they're cartoonish, but they can still have cartoonish development or dark cartoonish change, right? And so, like, we'll get into it more when we get to the end of the episode, but it is a bummer when you see something like Chanel having this big changing moment of standing up to Chad and then just immediately being fine with him coming back at the end, where it's, or even just, we'll start with the beginning scene here with Chad being into dead bodies again.
Yeah, so let's just dive.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Right in. But so the first scene is Chad and Chanel is revealing to him that she, you know, pushed Hester down the stairs. But by the way, Hester wasn't pregnant in the first place, so no worries. And really, out of nowhere, Chad was A, turned on by the dead body thing, and B, was turned on by Hester.
Yeah.
Which are two things that he seems to have, you know, left behind since being confronted by dead bodies and choosing Chanel over Hester.
And this is one of those things where, so I actually thought this opening scene between the two of them was funny. And I think that Chad is funny. And I think that his love of dead bodies was always a funny joke. And he continued to have good delivery here. But it is really true that, like, you feel like you're stuck in this weird cycle where nothing can change. And like we're saying, like, yes, we understand these characters are surrealist and these characters are cartoonish, and that's fine. They don't have to be super, super deep, but there has to be some change and some development so you don't feel like you're just repeating the same thing over and over and the characters don't change.
For me, it's more a matter of consistency.
Yeah.
And I always get back to this, but like trusting the writing. Yeah, there are different writers to different episodes, but, you know, can there not be agreement? Like, once you say that a character is this, unless it's really like part of it that they were lying, part of the story that is relevant that they were lying, why go back? Like, it takes me out of the storyline. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I love Chad. Chad is like my favorite character. I love watching him. I love everything he says and does, basically, like, exclusively. And And so it really annoys me when I get used to a character and I just want to like see the character as they are now.
Yeah. Well, and it's we've talked about this before with the whole having that whole big deal about we're going to eat food now and then having like 3 or 4 episodes in a row where they just make jokes about them not eating food again.
Yeah, and I bring that up later in this recap of like do we think that's funny, but we'll get there.
Yeah. No, I just want some sort of change so it doesn't, especially because it's only a 13 episode story where it feels like we're probably not going to see, even if they get season 2, we're not going to see most of these people again. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not like it's a procedural where we have to like have them always be the same every episode and you can pop mm-hmm. in whenever you want. This is a very serialized show and it's like, this isn't like, yes, they are cartoony, but this isn't a cartoon. They don't have to revert back to square one at the end of every episode.
Or what happens is like, look at this growth. And then it's like, oh, but by the way, no, that was a lie. But then they repeat the, and here is the growth. Yeah. And then it's like, well, we've already seen this storyline.
Yeah.
You're rehashing it. Why? Yeah. This is a waste of airtime. So I'm way, like, this is me being way harsher on it than I kind of actually feel.
Yeah.
In a way, like, it feels so inconsequential. Like, what's the big deal? He wants to have sex with a dead body.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we thought it was so funny that then when you take away that element of humor, it's just weird to bring it back.
And it's honestly, if the thing with Chanel at the end didn't happen, which is a much bigger deal, then that I probably would have been like, oh, this cat thing is kind of silly, but I would have moved on. It's really more that this is an ongoing issue for multiple characters and multiple plot points.
It's just one of the main issues in the show.
Yeah.
Like, if I would say that there's an issue in this show, this is probably number one.
Yeah. Shall we move on to the Gigi scene?
Yeah, so Gigi and the Red Devil in full Red Devil gear, they're in the hotel room in which Boone died, and Gigi's complaining that she's not with Wes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is not how I wanted to spend Thanksgiving. But then she goes and says that, oh, thank you for spending Thanksgiving with me, though, but I know you have to leave. So basically, this means that Gigi asked the Red Devil to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But why isn't Gigi with Wes?
Yeah, because later on, Wes is like, where's Gigi?
Exactly.
Now, this is one of those things where I actually am expecting it to be addressed somehow, whether it's somehow Wes is in on something, or I don't, or maybe the Red Devil stopped a phone call from Wes, or I don't know, but this is so weirdly inconsistent that I'm kind of expecting them to address it.
I would be really disappointed.
Yeah.
If it didn't get addressed, but at the same time, I have no idea how they can smoothly do that.
Yeah. This was also just... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, I don't know. Are we supposed to expect in the finale that there be a scene where the Red Devil goes, like, and then this is what I did here, and this is what I did here? Like, a huge expositional...
To be fair, Boone did do that before he died.
Well, right, but not... This is way more...
Yeah.
Over way more episodes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I wonder if there will be some sort of reveal with Wes, or I don't know. Especially now we know he is related to them. Maybe he knew. Maybe he's been in on it. Like, you never know.
I mean, Wes was my first suspect.
The main reason we started discounting him was that Gigi was hiding it from him. But maybe maybe he was another party. Maybe they found their dad in a program. Like, I don't know. It seems crazy to me, but it's possible, I suppose.
This is such a mess.
Yeah. So the thing that was particularly strange to me in this scene was the you know, bellhop or whatever with the food coming.
Room service.
Yeah. And being very clear that Gigi was in the room with the Red Devil and the guy seeing the Red Devil there.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're in a different town.
Yeah.
There's been an APB out for, like, people in this Red Devil costume.
Yeah.
They know this is a serial killer.
It was very strange to me, and it seemed like exactly the kind of thing that Gigi had been mad at Boone about, as far as, like, making yourself known or, like, showing your connection or whatever. And so I'm like, is this, again, like, something that's somehow going to be explained? Like, is Gigi not actually dead at the end of this episode? Or I don't know. But, like, it seems, if this really is Gigi's last scene, it's not a great last scene for her. And she was so good.
It's pathetic. Yeah, that's the thing. I never thought, like, yeah, she was a bit, you know, crazy at times. Yeah. But I would never say that Gigi was pathetic.
Or unintelligent.
No, like, this she was outright like, strong and wacky and hilarious.
So, I mean, we'll get into it more as far as at the end of the episode about her being dead, but I'm just going to throw out right now that I think there are a lot of great things about her being dead, and I, in a lot of ways, I'm proud of them, or I commend them for doing this. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I definitely think there are negatives that come with it, too, but we can save that for later, yeah. I guess.
I really just hope it wasn't a fake out. I don't want another death fake out. I'd be so mad at that. Yeah. Did you actually expect something to happen with there being the electric serrated knife?
No, I really thought that it was just going to be one of those moments where it's like making you go, ooh, maybe something will happen, but it won't.
Yeah, me too.
So I actually was very surprised.
Going back to the bellhop guy, I kind of thought that the electric knife would play into like them killing him somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought
and us too. Seeing that.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, you know, somehow flashing to that.
Yeah.
And then I kind of forgot about it till the end, like waiting for this scene, and that never happened. And then, oh, wait, never mind. It was Gigi.
Yeah.
So, So I was either borderline like this is a fake out or the Red Devil's like, Gigi, what? Why no, let's murder this guy. I am actually saying that.
One thing we haven't talked about in a while that I wanted to bring up was I really like the Red Devil costume. I just find that mask and like when she's talking to him and everything or her or whatever, that I find that mask really funny and like I don't know, like it's both scary and like comedic and it really fits the show to me, and I really do enjoy that costume.
I was gonna say I find it really unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that too. Yeah,
but in a nice way. Like I don't mind it. It doesn't like haunt me or anything. Well, just like when I see it, it just kind of irks me in a weird way that I'm fine with.
There are scenes where I find it scary and there are scenes where I find it goofy, and I think it works in both capacities.
Perfectly put, Daniel. Anyway, so then the next scene we see is number three arriving at her family's mansion for their frozen dinner family Thanksgiving. You know, that's how her family, her dad, made the fortune from Italian-style chicken cacciatore. Yes.
So this is one of those scenes that I thought had something potentially clever and funny here, but kind of just dragged on a little too long. It kind of reminded me of the scene in forget what episode, maybe Chainsaw, when they had the sound machine thing with Gigi and the Dean, where I'm like, this is clever and different, and I appreciate it, and I'm like smiling, but it's going on a long time, and I don't know.
Well, I'd say that they had to justify this scene. So, like, there's no way that this scene could be short.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, backstory.
Yeah. Well, it's, like, her whole little arc for the episode in one scene, so I understand why it's so long, but...
Right. But I just mean to say that, you know, if they're revealing more family stuff to us, then they have to show all the family dynamics. Yeah. And then, you know, throw in some cinematography stuff, too.
Yeah. It was more to me that the joke itself was only okay, and and there weren't enough different jokes within this long scene.
Okay, it was all very one note.
Yeah, and so like it was a fine joke, but it was one long joke in my opinion. I did want to say, I'm blanking here. I wanted to go back, but I forgot. The music they use in this scene, especially when she's like leaving the car or whatever to come in, and I actually really liked her Tinder date analogy.
Yeah, me too.
That was really funny.
It was a really good joke.
Given our history.
Yeah.
podcast reveal.
Yeah, Dan and I met on Tinder.
Yes.
You know, we were both trying to... No, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that joke. No, Dan, can you cut that out?
No, you just put your foot in your mouth. You can accept it.
Yeah, that's what we were looking for. We were looking for people who could put feet in their mouths. We were also professional contortionists.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So- in their own. Oh, God damn it! I just keep burying myself in this hole further and further. I meant something. Never mind. Anyway, we thought that joke was funny. Can
yes, but what I was trying to say earlier was the whole idea. What I was trying to say earlier was I wasn't sure if the music that they played there, and I think that they might have played that same music in previous episodes, but it is very reminiscent of Heather's to me.
I had a similar vibe where I was really like, this is peppily upbeat in a very twisted way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really reminded me of Heather's. And so it was almost like, is this from Heather's or is it just a similar kind of sound? I couldn't remember, but yeah, I need to watch the movie again. I love that movie. Moving on, I guess. Yes, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
About this? Well, I was just gonna say, like, the very end of that scene was the fact that, you know, number three's like, "I'm going home." Like, what? Where? Since when? And it just started this whole big.
We're a family.
Yeah, like it started off that whole theme that just kind of confused me. Like, since when are you a family? Like, this is your home. You didn't really give a crap, you know, until this episode. It just felt really forced to me.
Of all the people, I would actually kind of disagree with you with three. I mean, everybody else, I kind of see where you're coming from more. But three, like, is the one who bailed Chanel out. She did connect with Sam. I feel like she does kind of like five a little bit, like... And if she really hates her family, I can sort of buy it with her. I just can't buy it with everybody.
Okay, you know, yeah, I can see that. I agree with you now.
Yeah.
But it felt forced.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Because it was it's funny because I was saying it was a long scene, but in a lot of ways it was a lot of rapid fire. This is her life. Now we're moving on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, moving on, we're going to talk about Wes, I suppose.
Well, number three goes back, and then that's when she sees the dean.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And kind of we mentioned this before, but we have the return of the, like, I just pretend to eat joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And weirdly enough, I think they've beat me into submission of, like, appreciating those jokes.
Yeah, I don't know. They're fine. I have this one. It doesn't super bug me anymore, at least.
Yeah, well, this is what I mean. Yeah. Like,
whatever. This is how it goes.
This is what it is. Yeah. At least they're consistent with it now.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But then we do switch over to Wes. Mm. And this is another thing that I really was like, can we just have some cohesion on this episode? His turkey looked almost done.
I thought of that, too.
Why the hell didn't he bring it with him to Kappa? Or even, like, if it's not done, like, bring it.
Yeah, there was a strange
choice. It seemed more done than the other turkey.
Yeah, it's just like you didn't even need to have that prop there, and so then no one would have this question. So
it just distracts me from the show, and it's like maybe I shouldn't rely on the show to make this much sense, but I can't help it.
Yeah, no.
Like, I expect... You know, I expect a certain level of covering your ass.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where it's like, if there wasn't an episode that was making such a big deal about when is the turkey going to be ready, when is the turkey going to be ready, then this wouldn't be that big of a deal either. Mm-hmm. But if he arrived and the turkey was ready and they just had dinner, then I wouldn't have been like, well, why didn't he bring his turkey? But because it's such a big major plot point, it's like, what?
Maybe this bothered, I don't know, this bothered me more on the rewatch.
What?
The fact thing? That, yeah, just because I was, like, really noticing it. And
yeah.
Obviously that I knew that it would be a big deal, a big plot point, that there was, you know, that people are checking on the turkey being done.
Yeah.
So... I don't know if that was even something that people who only watch it once noticed.
Or think about. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm curious. I
mean, look, it's a nitpick. It is a nitpick, but it's just like...
Oh, absolutely. I don't deny that. I don't deny that I'm a nitpicker. I can't help it. It's what you get.
Well, not really a nitpick in my mind is Grace and Zadig is generally deciding, oh, we don't want to leave the house alone here. We feel bad.
So stupid. Like, just really stupid. We feel weird leaving the house alone. What? That is a direct line. Like, weird leaving the house alone. That is, I paused rewound and wrote that directly straight out of Grace's dumb mouth. Like, what the fuck? People keep getting murdered in this house. Like, the house would be fine.
And it's not even alone. The dean and three are there.
I mean, they don't know that.
I think that the dean is there.
No, they don't know that because even three was surprised that dean was there.
Three was surprised because she had left, but Grace and
Zayday seem to have also left and then come back.
No, I don't think they ever left.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they decided not to leave. They didn't want to leave the house.
Disappointed in Zayday. Zayday, who had like a good head on her shoulders. This episode, why would you come back? Your grandma sent you a chainsaw. Like,
yeah, and I'm still, like,
highly suspicious.
I'm still hoping, I'm still really hoping that she has some reveal because, yeah, she has been so underutilized and so, like, unintelligent lately. And also, she, like, barely does anything. Like, even though she's here, like, she could have just gone home because we didn't need her in this episode. She didn't do anything. And so, it's not like even, like, she was the one who was super pointing fingers at anybody or anybody pointed fingers at her. It was just like, yep, Zayday's here. And
yeah. She didn't stand up for Grace at all.
Nope.
She didn't. And she used to be suspicious of Pete, and then she stopped.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's a good point.
Magically, which I, you know, later I write up, like, Pete is still a suspect.
Yeah. No.
And she just lets that go, too. It just kind of drove me nuts that she used to be so smart.
Yeah.
Also, her, like, sort of boyfriend got murdered, and she was super upset.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, good point. Leave. Yeah. Not only was it Zayday that thought that Pete could be like a suspect, but I'm pretty sure in the episode where everybody's trapped inside together, that like the Chanels were like, "Where's Pete? This is suspicious." Like,
yeah.
So
super suspicious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like we said before, Wes reveals that Gigi was supposed to come, but she didn't. Yeah. To Thanksgiving. So anyway, he's invited over to the Kappa house too.
So let's just move to the Radwells, which is for me where most of the big comedy was this episode. And
yes,
this is one where, like, this is very specific comedy, and I can totally see it being too much for a lot of people. And certainly on a rewatch, it wasn't quite as out of the park. But generally, I actually found this really funny. Really enjoyed most of the stuff here. A lot of great moments and. What were you thinking?
Oh, me too. It was kind of wonderful watching these just absolutely terrible people. Like, they're the worst people.
Mm.
Like, this is the worst of the rich snob, like, cartoonishly rich snobby people. And I really liked it. I thought it was really funny. I was glad to get out of Kappa for an episode, and that they kind of culminated the whole, like, we're rich storyline with Chad. I don't know. I liked it.
You know what I just thought of?
What?
I think I might actually like this show more if it was a cartoon.
I don't think I agree with you.
You don't think you'd agree with me? I think it would just be like such a different cartoon, but like it is like the rating is a cartoon. Like it's, I don't know. I think it would be interesting as a cartoon. It would feel like a different cartoon, but it would still feel like it fit as a cartoon to me.
I mean, I'm like trying to put it in the context of things like Archer and Rick and Morty and like something like that, because it makes more sense than like Family Guy.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I agree. It definitely, yeah.
And but I have a hard time picturing them. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just like,
I mean, it would definitely lose the great cinematic stuff they do, which is, I mean, that's a really great
facial
part of it.
Expressions.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the fact that you can watch this show on mute and still enjoy people's faces.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. But I think it would be really funny to see, like, maybe even just like a little web series of, like, can't you see the scene where it's like, oh, we're meeting the Radwells, and they're like,
I can. Yeah. I can. It's just, I can't nail down an animation style, which for me is really frustrating. Anyway, so there are some really great lines. I loved Bunny Radwell is like, Chad hasn't mentioned you ever. I think that was her. Maybe Mr. Radwell.
It might have been Mr. I can't remember, but either way, it was really good.
They had great lines.
And I love the whole opening introduction here of their tradition of stating their names and something they're thankful for. I thought there was a lot of great stuff here, especially my favorite was Chad himself.
Oh, of course.
Being thankful for the Red Devil was just fantastic.
For not specifically for not killing him.
Yeah, that's really great stuff.
And watching Emma Roberts be like, oh God, oh honey, this isn't going to work out for you. Like, I mean, I saw that coming, that it would. I didn't know it would be the Red Devil that he was thankful for, but it's like, he's not about to be thankful for Chanel.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to say something else. I don't know what. Man. And did not disappoint. Yeah. So I actually have a question.
Yeah.
Did you, I mean, yes, it was very funny, but did you feel like they had, you know, sufficient reason to treat Chanel so terribly?
Yeah, it was kind of odd. It's almost like I almost would have preferred they did know the Oberlins and, like, generally found them distasteful, or maybe, like, they were millionaires, not billionaires, or something like that. Like, the fact that they didn't even know her, like, anything about her family, and were just, like, it seemed like if they did, they might be okay with, like, it was very strange. Her outfit was weird, so I would judge her for that. But,
like that.
But, yeah.
Maybe that's why I didn't stand out. I was like, she looks lovely for Chanel.
I mean, because the thing, too, was that, like, if it had just been Bunny, and then I could have written it off as, like, oh, no girl's good enough for Chad or whatever. But, like, everybody hated her, and seemingly for no reason, which was part of the comedy, sure. But, yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't just make it, like, millionaires versus billionaires or something
like
that.
Or, like, we have a long-standing family feud between the Oberlins and the Radwells or something like that.
I'm going to do a Gilmore Girl reference here for everybody playing at home and say it reminded me of when Rory went to Logan's and the Logan family looked down on her, on Rory, even though she has, her family had a lot of money, because she wanted to work and had aspirations and didn't want to be a housewife, which I thought they could have done something similar here. But fun fact.
Great. That's great. I'm too not interested in Gilmore Girls to know those references. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, just going back to it real quick, it was weird that they were accusing Chanel of being a gold digger. Because we know she's like, I'm obscenely rich. So now it's confusing. Like, what is not, like, how is her obscenely rich compared to their gross rich? You know, like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea that they're going for is just simply that because they don't know her name, she can't possibly be worth anything because they know all the people that matter.
Yeah.
That's what I am assuming is going on. I mean, but I also think that's part of the joke, is we know that she's not a gold digger and they just assume she's a gold digger.
Yeah.
And, like,
I just feel like there were, I maybe if there were just a couple of tweaks.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of going, like, nailing the gold digger aspect as hard, it would have been another thing. Or if they refocus the gold digger more so on Hester.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have a huge problem with it. It facilitated a lot of, like, great comedy.
Yeah, definitely. Because I also, they could have also done something like the way her family made their money, they found, like,
I like that line that the dad says about, like, you can use it to buy another Olive Garden.
Yeah, I like that too. Like,
okay. Yeah, that kind of more of that thing, like new money versus old money potentially or something. Well,
like, even like if I could see, like, if number three came and they're like, you're the frozen dinner people. And it's like, yes, she's rich, but, like, that's not classy or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, going back to Hester, Hester comes into the dinner. She's alive and well.
So I gotta give you props here.
Yay, Olga gets a theory. That's correct. Oh, yeah.
I really thought she was dead.
Oh, I hoped with all my heart that she would be. Honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see if it was worth it, her coming back. Jury's out
so
on that.
So far, really isn't to me. I mean, like, I thought that the moment at the end of this episode with Chanel and her was good, but because of Chanel, not because of Hester, so
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if it would have been as poignant if Chanel just stood up for herself.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I would have kind of preferred Chanel's a killer now. Hester's actually dead. And that, like, again, change for the character, like, actually have Chanel become a darker person and have to deal with the fallout of, like, you know, like, I don't know. Now it's just like, well, that doesn't even, that big character moment of her trying to murder someone doesn't even matter.
Yeah, that's very true. We had her powerful evil self kind of stand out at the end of last week's episode, and now this episode, it's her powerful good self.
Yeah, it's so,
you know, and then they revert from that too.
Like, well, and think about the episode before was the whole thing of, oh, I'm gonna connect with Grace. And we're going to, like, I'm going to start, because remember at the end of that episode with her and Grace, it was like, oh, Chanel's becoming a better person, and maybe now she'll become, like, a weird sort of half-ally with Grace or something. And then the next episode, she tries to murder someone, and the next episode, she's good again. It's like,
In this episode, in a later scene, she, like, calls her mom, and again, we get the, like, her mom is a drunk, and is unhelpful, and is selfish, and da-da-da, and, like, again, we have this sympathy for Chanel.
I actually did like the drunk on wine is still drunk.
Yeah, I like that line. Like I said, I really, like, I feel like maybe people are gonna think that I really am super harsh on it. It's just, like, I'm not gonna sit here and repeat all of the jokes that I found funny.
Yeah.
But they were funny.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah. All right, so I was trying to remember if when Hester comes in and appears, if it just immediately cuts the break, or if we get the whole Chad's reasoning of her being like a sober life coach or whatever.
I don't remember.
But I did like, so I don't know when it, if it happens now or happens later, but I like, I forget exactly what the line was, but Chad, when he was saying, like, alcohol can, like, sneak up on you, and, like, and them all, like, actually being, like, like, supportive about him.
Yeah. Like, again, I love that he's like, you know, it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah, of course, this makes sense. But they, like, toast him with their wine.
Yeah.
They're just like, yes, we agree. It is, you know, a real threat to, you know, a productive life. Like, yes. A lot can be said in these very subtle.
Yeah.
I love it.
Any of the specific Radwells stand out to you? Like, did any of them you particularly enjoyed? Or,
I was surprised by how little there was actually for the brothers to do.
Yeah, that's true. Very cameo-y. But I actually liked the stuff with Chad Michael Murray sort of interrupting his wife and being like, L.A., blah, blah, blah. And
yeah,
I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Alan Thicke is always good.
All I can think of, though, now is his, every time I see him, is his son.
Yep.
Robin Thicke.
Yep.
Yeah, just in case people didn't know that. Yep.
Shall we end this episode with blurred lines?
Oh, over my dead body. Over Hester's no longer dead body. Actually, no, I should think of him more from How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Canada. Anyway. All right. So we are going back to Kappa House.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the big scene of the beginning of everyone accusing each other of being the Red Devil, and it's all fun and games, and the dean is the one who proposed this. You know, instead of Pictionary, like the Radwells will do, no, it's who's the murderer?
So I have to say that a huge chunk of this, aside from the big West reveal, which we'll get to, is technically filler, because a lot of it is accusing people that we know more than the characters do, and we know that they're probably wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it's filler, but to me, it's fantastic filler. It's really fun, and it does bring up some new points, a lot of comedy that I enjoy in it, very fun meta, and really Scream, it really reminds me of Scream and what Scream was all about. So I really thoroughly enjoyed all of this.
I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah.
It just, again, it facilitated great one-liners. Mm. One of my favorites was like, this is an unnecessarily complicated story, the best kind, because that's just like the perfect excuse for whatever the show will end up doing. Mm. You know, like that's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, definitely. So the first person accused is number 3. Who we have pretty much completely ruled out because
she saw Boone. Like
she saw Boone while he was on the phone with the other killer.
So
there's this whole thing of where, you know, why did she come up the stairs all flushed during the chainsaw attack, and she has bowel issues or something.
She doesn't eat enough, basically.
Yeah.
Get a little meat on those bones.
Do you think that that's actually it, or do you think it's another sort of reveal, or just a total throwaway?
I think that was just a throwaway. Mm-hmm. Number 3 is like the real, you know, comic relief out of all the Chanels.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to take that at face value. I want to take it at face value. I want her to be the funny one.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. But you know, there was, you know, they bring up the chainsaw attack again, and something that comes to mind is, where was number five during the attack?
Number five. Well, a bunch of the people come up, like, after the Dead Devil gets kicked out or whatever, a bunch of the people come from, like, and look down at what's going on, like, a bunch of the Chanels. I think five is there, but we could, well, hold on, but we know it's Boone. We already, Boone said last week
that
he's the
one. I thought there were two Red Devils
there. No, only one Red Devil attacks at the...
Oh, right, right, yeah. Jeez, I'm silly. Yeah, yeah, because,
yeah,
yeah, so, I'm confusing it with the voice with scene. The,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Never mind then.
So,
but still, you know.
Then three accuses Dean Monk. But we.
And that's when it cuts to a commercial.
Yeah, yeah. So we get this whole Chanel talking to her mom, being like, oh, what am I going to do, mom?
The moms on this show, can I just say, are like, they very much veer towards alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Grace's mom, Bunny Radwell seem to not be too dependent on alcohol, but she's also, you know, still a terrible person.
I always wonder on shows like this, like, how much of the parenting issues that are written into these shows are because the writers have parenting issues. And because I remember, I know there are a couple shows that I've watched where it's like the writer has talked about their own parents doing some of the things they've written in. And it's like, I don't think these specific things maybe, but Ryan Murphy might have some issues with his parents.
Ryan Murphy, like, I would say that the secondary subtitle to this season of American Horror Story Hotel should be American Horror Story Hotel Mommy Issues.
Yeah.
Like, it is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's literally kidnapped children.
Mm-hmm.
Saving like allegories of like saving them from bad parenting. Yeah. I don't know what Ryan Murphy therapy is something that is helpful.
I mean, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but yeah, it's I do always wonder when things like that come up as a strong theme with like almost all of the parents.
Yes. Yeah. So that's just something I noticed where I was like, the moms really suck on this show. Anyway, so this is when Mr. Radwell tries to bribe Chanel. I don't remember Mr. Radwell's first name. I just know it rhymes with all the boys' names.
Is he Thad?
I think he's Tad.
I think there's a Tad and a Thad, so I'm
confused.
Well,
I think Thad is the younger brother, the like sexual deviant brother.
Okay. So I legitimately, when he came in, and Chanel says this herself, but I legitimately thought he was going to have sex with her. Or like,
really?
Try to, you know, like, not actually have sex.
I never got that vibe. Yeah. That's interesting.
Because he just is so smarmy. I don't know. I thought it was going to be like, oh, the mom doesn't approve of her, but the dad just like, oh, she's attractive.
But we saw from the promo where he's like, you're trash, Chanel.
That's true.
I'm kind of sad that they revealed that in the promo.
Mm, yeah.
I didn't really want to... That might have been part of something else that not ruined my enjoyment, that like tempered my enjoyment of like knowing that Chanel wouldn't have a warm welcome at the Radwells.
And we knew that he was gonna eventually open up that pot with the turkey or whatever. And is it a pot? What do you call that thing where you reveal the turkey?
Oh no, it has a French name. Yeah. I don't speak French.
But we knew that was coming, so we knew that that was probably going to be some sort of horrific reveal.
Yeah, I thought that would be Chad's head, and I'm really glad it wasn't.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the – even though I always talk about the promos and, like, make a point of watching them, I don't know if I agree with everything that they put in them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a general issue with most promos, I would say. But, yeah.
Potentially. Anyway, so, yeah, then we go over to Chad and Hester, and Hester is like, where's the pumpkin pie? And Chad's like, no. Got leftover dessert aspic. And aspic is basically like a meat gelatin dish, for those who don't know.
I had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, so my family, which is my family's Russian, and Olga, in case you can tell, is an Eastern European name. And they are obsessed. Like, it is a delicacy, this dish. They make it for all of the big holidays. And I find it absolutely disgusting. It
sounds awful to me.
I really don't enjoy it, and I get a lot of judgment from my family. Like, I am the Hester in this situation of, like, meat, jelly, congealed. And
I do want some just general Jell-O right now, but I don't want any meat involved.
See, I don't even like Jell-O.
Ah, you fool.
Judgment. Is this going to be... Should have put that in my Tinder bio. Doesn't like Jell-O. Would have changed
no
a lot
Jell-O,
of things.
No Jell-O, no me.
Aw, well, I'm glad I didn't. But anyway, yeah, so I just thought it was funny to have this in the episode where I'm like, most people don't know what this is. They are lucky. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then Chanel comes back and is like, your dad tried to bribe me. And Chad's just like, you're a screw-up in this case. I like this. I like the fact that Chad is, like, pushing Chanel towards, you know, the last straw. Like, it's not just, you know, there's a progression of how much Chanel can take.
I suppose, though our last interaction between them last week was her, like, legitimately having already been like, you're going to pay, this is the last straw.
Again, there's a lot of regression,
yeah,
including in this episode.
Yeah.
But up to that last scene in this, if I'm looking just at this episode,
yeah,
you know, there's like what Chanel's putting up with, what she's putting up with. Mm-hmm. And along the way, you know, everyone is hilarious. Chad is especially funny and very reasonable. Again, I love how reasonable Chad is. The things he says make perfect sense.
The little conflict resolution. Murder.
Pushing people down the stairs is not the most adult form of conflict resolution.
Well, he is a psych major. So.
Yes. But also, can you really disagree with this sentence?
No,
I personally cannot.
No, I can't.
Yeah. But at the same time, even in this context, he's being a jerk.
Yeah. You know, I guess I have more to say about the regression, but I'll hold it until...
when it actually gets regressed upon. Yeah.
So, they're back at Kappa, and number five is fingering the dean.
What?
He, you know, like, pointing fingers at.
Uh-huh.
I know it sounds sexual, but I didn't mean it that way.
Uh-huh.
Why?
How did she
gotta...
finger the... You know that she fingered the dean with the 8-meat stuffing, right?
Okay. Oh, number five. Oh, I got confused. I was just thinking about how number three fingered the dean, and I saw number five on the thing.
Well, both number five and number three fingered the dean.
So much fingering. Okay.
And there's a lot of stuffing, too.
Anyway, yeah, five comes back. I actually, number five was the one that I enjoyed the most coming back, and just everybody being like, he says things, and then...
It was great.
Yeah, that was good.
Total gaslighting.
Yeah.
Continued.
And I continue to just be like, I think it would be pretty fun if she actually was insane and everybody was else just blowing off her insanity, but she actually was crazy the whole time.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of, I guess, Scream 1996 movie spoiler, but it kind of reminds me of Stu and how Stu was always kind of crazy, but nobody was really picking up on it, and then he was, like, actually crazy.
Yeah. Like, the craziest.
Yeah.
That would be nice. I mean, kind of get into this more, but number five is definitely still suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
So, definitely. Yeah,
but, okay,
that might work out.
So they're fingering the dean, and,
Can you stop saying that? I just really don't want to be thinking about this.
So
no offense to Jamie Lee Curtis. She's beautiful, especially for a woman of her age and dignified stature. But...
So they're talking about how she munches on meats, and we're so mature in this episode.
Anyway.
Okay, so they the main thing is that they realize that she does have deli meat, and so...
She does not have the allergy.
Yeah, yeah. And so she probably did kill her husband. And so this is one of those things, too, where at the end of the episode, everybody's like, well, it seems like we don't know who the killer is. Well, you know that Nadine probably has killed her husband and Feather's in an asylum. Maybe you should handle that situation.
Yeah, they're just like, we're not going to call the police because there are too many open things. It's like, you have pretty much conclusively... prove the innocence, maybe not the guilt of the dean, but the innocence
of Feather.
Of Feather.
Well, like, I think you have enough information for the dean to be arrested and awaiting trial.
Yeah, like why are you letting go of this? Like, yeah. I just had a lot of trouble with that personally. Like, this is a, stop it. Go back, arrest her.
Yes. And again, so three and the dean are both people that were like, with the knowledge that we have, are like, no, they're not involved.
Yeah, which is interesting that they were the first ones accused in this episode of being the Red Devil. Anyway, but then Wes goes and surprises us, and he accuses his own daughter of being the killer. That's not spooky, Dan. Damn it.
Spooky daughter. I liked this, actually. I thought this was an interesting turn for him.
Did you see this coming?
No, I didn't.
Me neither. Actually.
I thought he was going to point finger at Pete, actually.
Me too.
I very thought he was going to finger Pete.
This joke got old very fast.
All right. So, I thought it was going to be Pete. I liked this. I think that because he said it was sort of had been eating away, like he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to bring it up, but he said it had been eating away at him. And he did have strong, like a lot of strong moments of evidence that would make someone, especially with Gigi having been, you know, bugging him and like Ben's ear.
That's the thing.
And, like,
Gigi's been like planting these ideas in his head that his daughter is unstable.
Yeah,
I can see why he would start to believe that and kind of try and figure out more into it, especially with what he'd already gathered about like what he saw that didn't add up.
Well, that's the thing. I'm very glad that the reasons he gave were like new things, right? Because if it had just been like, oh, Gigi's gotten to him, I would have been like, this is ridiculous. But
it would have made me mad.
Yeah, but Gigi doing that and on top of, I mean, the whole thing about, what was her, Mandy, like she was the only one who went to Mandy. That was a big point. The fact that he saw her talking to a Red Devil is a big deal.
Definitely.
Uh-huh. And, what do you go?
Well, I was going to bring up the fact that the biggest one is that Grace was at the visit at Kappa the day that Melanie Dorcas was burned with acid and said that she saw a Red Devil.
Yes, and that was wearing a shirt with a giant red R at the time.
But then, we saw that she got kicked out by 3 and 5, and I kind of want to believe the visuals of that again.
Well,
I mean,
she could have been kicked out and then go and put on a costume and snuck back in through the tunnels or something, you know.
That would have... Chronologically, that makes no sense.
Does it make no sense?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Why?
Because we see Chanel running out, and then from that episode one scene, like, immediately the spray tan thing gets picked up and Melanie Dorcas gets sprayed again. So, like,
But 3 and 5 are there in the room with Dorcas when it happens.
Were they? I thought it was other girls.
No, I'm pretty sure 3 and 5, because they're still there. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was them. Wait, we have to rewatch the premiere.
We're gonna watch it before the finale. We promise. We will. Maybe.
So I still think it could very easily. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it could also just be Boone. But I think this is interesting. I like that they called out Grace. It does make me think it's less likely to be Grace.
Yeah.
I think the giant red R is for a red herring. I still think it's possible that she's involved. You never know, and it's still been such an odd show as far as who's the protagonist that if they had it be her, I wouldn't be that shocked.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring up something else. That after Wes accuses Grace, it goes Wes Grace number 5 in terms of who's reacting.
Yeah.
To the accusation. And then aside from Wes, number 5 is the first person to bring up evidence against Grace.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you're obsessed with your mom. She was the face of Kappa's evil. You know, you do anything to redeem your dead mother, your beloved dead mother. Like, that sounds very spiteful.
Yeah, I think that definitely, that combined with the fact that nobody pointed fingers at 5, definitely, again, made me think, 5, you're suspicious, like, you know.
Yeah. And then, like, jumping forward a little bit, nobody accused Pete either. So, like, nobody's accusing Pete or number 5, which is doing the opposite of, like, oh, when they accuse someone, it makes me think that they're innocent. So when they don't accuse someone, it makes me think that they're guilty.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be pleasantly surprised if they subverted that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be I'm still fine if we end up being right that it's five. It's just they have to have, as long as he's does a great performance with it and there isn't some sort of other twist about her motivation or if somebody else is also the killer, you know, like I'm still kind of hoping five is the reveal.
I'm hoping for a lot of things. I'm hoping that Zayday makes sense. I'm hoping that number five makes sense. I'm hoping Chanel continues growing a spine. Like, I'm hoping I understand why Grace is still a main character, you know, like that kind of thing. You know, where Pete goes, that kind of thing.
I understand why Grace is a main character. I have to understand why she's making unintelligent choices.
Well, yeah, now I can really see how Grace is a main character, but like continue with her being a main character. Yeah. Anyway, but I just kind of going back to before Pete shows up, I love the fact that Zayday has like the best line of like hashtag stalker and Wes being like hashtag being a good father.
Is it like, Zayday that says hashtag? I thought it was three, but I might be wrong.
Oh, maybe it was.
But either way, I did.
Well, Zayday had a different one liner.
I did. She had
like nothing to do. I'm just trying to. Oh, her thing was like she's been live tweeting the night, and that's why Pete shows up.
Yeah.
I like how they explain a reason for Pete to show up. At least we have that.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
So Pete accuses Wes and we cut away
to a commercial.
This episode brought to you by the Radwells.
Brought to you by Pictionary.
Pictionary with the Radwells. So this Pictionary thing was fun. Me and you just played Pictionary the other night, inspired by this scene.
I brought it up as a joke and Dan actually ran with it.
I ran with it. Pictionary is good stuff. I enjoy a good rousing game of Pictionary.
When we tried to make it an arousing game of Pictionary, it didn't work.
To be clear, this was not just me and Olga.
No, that seems would be a bit much. Terrible time. And when I say arousing, we tried to make it like dirty Pictionary and it totally floundered. Like people were like, how do we draw this without drawing a penis?
How do we draw this without a penis? That's the eternal question.
Yeah. But of course. Anyway, speaking of penises, we've got the neck brace whore.
Yes.
Is this going to get us an explicit tag on this podcast?
We already are explicit, remember?
You said
fuck earlier.
Today?
Yes.
When?
Fuck just flies out of your mouth and you don't even realize it.
All right. I'm not going to disagree with you.
See, you know what's funny about this whole explicit tag thing is I've noticed that I actually swear less on this podcast than I do on other shows where I don't have the explicit tag. I think it's just something about like knowing that I can say anything. I'm like, well, why would I? But sometimes if I'm heated, I just have to swear on another podcast.
Well, I can do it for the both of us.
All right. So
next race fucking whore.
Pictionary scene. They are doing Pictionary and neck brace whore and all the Radwells are together and they're shouting out things. I mean, there's so many rapid fire jokes here that
it was really funny.
Yeah, I really did enjoy this quite a bit. And so this was like, I think this was a legitimately really strong scene because it combined, it combined really good comedy with this opening part here, but with a legitimately strong character moment, even though it gets ruined later, of Chanel standing up for Hester and apologizing and standing up for herself. And I thought that was a strong moment.
Absolutely. And before it got totally shat upon, I was super surprised by it and pleasantly surprised. And it was the kind of twist I wanted that I didn't know I wanted.
It's the kind of thing that could happen in episode 10 of a 13-episode season where you can act, where, especially in a season where season 2 might not have anything to do with this. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, why is she not just having this moment now? Like, it's time. We're episode 10. There's no reason not to just do this. We don't need her fawning over Chad anymore. Like, gross.
We could have Chad being more like, the shoe being on the other foot for once.
Exactly. Like, why? I think about how much more fun the comedy would be if they switched the scenario and he was trying to win her back and failing at it terribly because he's Chad and doesn't know how to be a nice person.
Yeah.
Like, I it would just.
That would genuinely be great. I would have enjoyed that so much more.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, just kind of going back to this scene, pre-frustration, you know. She I love that it felt genuine, the apology, and it had great music, like everything about the scene. Everything about the scene just worked for me.
Yeah, no, very, very strong scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know,
Pete turn is an their investigative tail, and journalist.
They also say that they're going back to Kappa. We go back to Kappa.
Where Pete is an investigative journalist, and he likes to make sure we're all reminded of that every couple seconds.
Of course.
And so he has a lot of stuff against Wes. He brings up him the whole idea of Wes burning down a house is brought up again.
No, well, Wes is like, Wes says he would rather, you know, like before he murders people, he would burn Kappa down. And I was like, Wes, stop volunteering your love of arson. Like, stop. Like, people keep incriminating themselves in other ways in this episode. And everyone just lets it go.
I actually kind of love that Wes is obsessed with arson.
Wes is like kind of like the low-key one of the funnier characters.
Yeah, I agree. Because he doesn't get a ton, but yeah, I think he's pretty funny.
Yeah, like also his, I mean, the whole paleo thing of like the fact that he was stealing meat from Meat Locker. And what else was it? Like, oh, he had a really funny thing. Oh, the fact that he's a total man slut. Like,
yeah.
I love that joke.
Well, here's the thing. So you have to, there's a lot of, the things that are actually revealed in these scenes aren't the things that are revealed in the scenes. It's the subtext here, which as far as like, or I don't even know if I call it subtext, but like the hidden thing behind like the paleo diet thing doesn't matter. The fact that he was stealing that meat doesn't matter. What matters is we now know that there are security cameras. Mm-hmm. And so like that will probably come back.
Well, that's how we can be like, well, maybe the Red Devil didn't have to be in the house to know what was going on.
Yeah,
or the fact that Pete knew that there were cameras. Did he just incriminate himself potentially or like say how he knew there was a lot of self-incrimination here again of volunteering himself as a suspect.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. So let's stop for a second. I don't know if you heard our podcast last week and our whole big talk about is P the Red Devil and is he trans and had he at once been the girl baby? And so assuming that that theory is correct, I definitely think this episode makes sense in with that theory as far as putting the blame on somebody else and with significant strong evidence, and B, the whole idea of maybe he wants to reveal that Wes is the father and because it's all about like getting to Grace and causing mayhem and preparing them for his big final thing, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
I do want to also point out that everybody kind of just dropped having any idea about Gigi. Like, Grace was so like, Gigi is the person, like two episodes ago.
Can I just say another thing I called from last week?
Yeah, you're right.
I was like, Dan, don't be disappointed that the dean didn't actually have a revelation about Gigi. And you're like, no, she had a revelation.
But what? Like, I don't understand. Like, Gigi, like, Grace and Pete were both like had dug up all this evidence against Gigi and nothing has changed. Why did if Pete isn't the killer, why on earth did he move to Wes? He already had this evidence on Gigi. I don't like it's
unless
so,
he knew that Gigi was dead.
And the dean already had a whole vendetta against Gigi. Why would he never even once points fingers at Gigi? And so it's very upsetting to me.
I agree with you. I'm not surprised, though.
Yeah.
Mostly just because that would protract things too much. Like we were saying how this would be better as maybe a 10-episode season or something like that. That's the thing. Like, they drew things out so much that we've gone, like, back and forth and back and forth on, like, who the people from 1995 are in the context of the modern day. And we as viewers are so far ahead of kind of the characters that when you think that the characters are catching up, they can't actually be because there are so many episodes left.
Yeah.
I actually have this idea that Wes is going to, I'm still thinking that Wes is going to like institutionalize Grace. And that even though, you know, skipping forward, he says that, no, I don't believe you're actually the killer. I think once he sees Gigi's head and after knowing that Grace has been so against Gigi, maybe he's going to think that Grace did do it. or at least if this is psychologically going to affect her. I wouldn't be surprised if Grace is institutionalized in the next couple episodes.
Well, the thing is, if that did happen, that would strengthen, in my opinion, that somehow Gigi's still alive and that Gigi did this as a final push to get her to be institutionalized. I still don't really think either of those things is going to be happening, just because I feel like if he was institutionalized, that would have been in the promo more. But who knows?
Maybe it's they finally possible. Stop messing with the promos. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not saying I want it to happen. As a matter of fact, I don't want that. Like, I don't find that interesting. Like you said, with Gigi out of the picture, that's less interesting.
Yeah.
Then again, she did the footwork on that in the previous episode. Yeah. So it's just kind of like she wanted it to happen, but now she's not alive to see it. That would still make sense. But it's just not an interesting storyline to me.
So, but let's dial it back a little bit and talk about the big Wes reveal.
Right. Here. The fact of the matter is that he is the father
of Boone and the other baby. So this was a big deal. This was a big reveal that I feel dumb for not having seen coming, honestly, because it's a funny thing, because I really did like it and was surprised, but it is a very by-the-book reveal to, I mean, even just look at MTV Scream and the whole thing there without saying who the killer is again a half-sibling is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in a lot of horror movies, and it's a big trope these days of having the killer be your half-sibling, and it's a way of keeping the killer close to you and personal connection, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of a tired thing. So even though, like, when I first watched this, I was like, great reveal, and it makes Grace even more important. Like, it does, but, like, now that I've had more time to think about how tropic this is, I'm kind of like,
Yeah. It also makes it interesting of how, like, Gigi was going after Wes, maybe because she knew.
Mm.
You know, that's another thing. Like,
because she wanted to be like, make a family with Wes.
Like, to be like, be the real mother and that kind of thing. Can I just say quickly that the way that Pete says that he got the evidence or concluded that Wes was the father, it's like there are a lot of leaps there that are really weird. Like, I'm friends with the county coroner and I know a friend who works for the Maury Povich show and they ran the DNA test and like.
Well, so now I had a question.
Yeah.
That I tweeted about. I don't know how coroners work very well, but why do they have his hair, especially if Boone isn't actually dead?
I mean, they might have, when they had the body, could have pulled it.
But why?
Hell if I know. For narrative convenience, and I don't know.
Well, no, but maybe that's one of those things where Pete is the killer and he's just making up random stuff. I bet he does know that Wes is his dad, but you know, he didn't find it out that way. He just knows. I honestly would. I'm hoping that we won't get a complete redo of MTV Scream as far as, the father parent figure is kidnapped in the final scene and the half sibling has to fight the other half sibling. I actually, the more and more I think about this, I kind of hope that Wes is somehow involved. Because that would at least make it a little bit different, and we wouldn't just have this one woman to be looking forward to the reveal of, you know.
Yeah.
But
I have no idea what I want anymore. I just want it to make sense.
Yeah.
And for characters to feel like they matter.
Yeah.
Is that so much to ask for?
Shall we move to Chanel and Hester having coming back?
Please, yes. Oh, wait, no. Well, first of all, I just want to get back to this stupid family thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Grace is like, yes, but we are a dysfunctional family. It's like, why the hell? You barely connected with these people, honestly.
Besides Zayday and Pete.
Yeah, but, like, I hate this trope. I don't even know if it's a trope. I hate this.
Well, here's the thing. I actually like this trope when it's done well.
Not in general.
Yeah. Because it is a general television trope of a motley crew of people find their family within each other and blah, 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 you know. And I usually like that because it usually they do form a family and there are bonds of connection. And mm-hmm. I do have a warm feeling in my heart seeing them all together celebrating Thanksgiving.
Friends and community.
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, even Glee to some extent.
Yeah.
I think that it's weird because that ending scene of them all gathering around the table, part of me does get that, like, oh, this is nice seeing them all together thing. Mm-hmm. But that's just because I like these characters and I like seeing them together. But they haven't earned them seeing each other as family.
Yes. Like, that's exactly it. Like, I enjoyed seeing them together, but I don't believe that they actually
feel that way.
Feel this way. Like, I can't believe that they feel like a family. Even with, you know, number three saying in the beginning and them setting it up that early, like she's going home and Grace saying, but, you know, we've been through this experience of being hunted together. It's like, but you have all been trying to backstab each other.
Well, it's the people that it mostly doesn't make sense for me are Zayday and Grace feeling this way. Because the Chanels at least all have.
Well, what about the Jean?
Oh, well, yeah, that makes no sense at all either. Yes, the Dean and all the like, more... But I guess what I'm trying to say is that the Chanel's feeling that way, at least I can somewhat buy into, just because they all have such terrible actual families that, in comparison, there's at least some form of connection with the other Chanels. Hester excluded, where Hester does... I don't even understand why Hester's there, but...
Well, I mean, now... Chanel has been like, you are number six, you are my sister, so I can see that now.
So now I guess we could maybe talk a tiny bit about Hester as far as, like, is it possible that she's the one?
I don't think so.
I hope that she isn't, but it's like, are we gonna get another death for her? We already saw her, like that would be anticlimactic, and so I am nervous. I think he could be the killer. I'm hoping not, but...
I would just be bored by that, to be honest with you. It's not... Maybe not bored, but just, like, underwhelmed.
Yeah. Especially if he was the killer, I guess, like, we've seen, like, nothing. Like, we have so much for why Grace is important now. But we have, like, nothing for why Chanel hasn't been murdered. Like, if Hester was the killer, why not just kill Chanel? It doesn't... make any sense.
I don't disagree with you. Yeah. But I also think that the Hester storyline has reached its zenith of, like, I mean, they did the love triangle, they had the confrontation of the family, it seems to be resolved, and now, especially with Chanel, the fact that, you know, it went from murder to reconciliation. Like, I don't know what other emotional things can be added on to that. The only other possible, I guess, resolution for her is if she gets murdered in a spree by the Red Devil, like, in the last episode prior to the final confrontation. I think that's really the only thing I can be satisfied by. But then again, the show's really good at coming up with things that I never knew I wanted.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm willing to go along with it, but I don't want her to be the killer.
Yeah, me. I just, I don't. We'll see. Hopefully, they surprise me and find some reason for having actually kept Hester alive, but so far I'm just like, I wish he was still dead.
But
we have this ending scene with them all gathering together and people are kind of going in and out, and I think that this is supposed to be like making you be like, okay, so who's the one who's actually doing things as they go in and out? And do you want to sort of talk about that?
Dean is the one who like comes out of the kitchen and then says, oh, it's ready. But then she's like, I'm going to the powder room. And then Zayday comes in from the kitchen with a lighter. And Zayday throughout the episode has been the one saying like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, like very much checking on the turkey. Even though we know that the Dean says that she saw it. Anyway, Zayday comes out of the kitchen with a lighter, and then Hester comes out of the kitchen with a sharp knife for carving.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then number three and number five go into the kitchen, and then they come and bring out the turkey, and number five says, wow, this is really light.
Yeah.
Which
is interesting.
Yeah, it is. So that means that someone has already taken, because if number three and number five, number three we don't think is on board with this murder thing. So that means that when number three and number five went into the kitchen, it was already under the cover, already on the serving dish.
I enjoyed you saying on board with this murder thing.
I say weird things. Yes. But anyway, all of this is happening, running back and forth. And I think it's very much meant to discombobulate us of, like,
who actually put it and what's going there. On. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit more about Kiki being dead. I mean, I figured out as soon as she said this feels lighter, I was like, oh my God, it's Kiki's head. But that was right before it happened. So it's not like it was, you know, I didn't figure it out all the other times they were like, where's Kiki? Because I really didn't see this coming at all. It was a big, this is a big, big surprise for me. I really thought Kiki was there till the end, that she was going to have a big confrontation with Wes and Grace. And so, like, this is a shock value that I think is interesting and totally, like, and it brings us down to just this one killer and who was the killer. And, you know, we had all those things we talked a few episodes back about, like, it's like the Cylons, like, there could be endless amounts of Red Devils, and we're not looking for who's the Red Devil, we're seeing who are the Red Devils, but now we're back down to the, it's a whodunit, and this is this person.
I love that. And I never thought that they would do that. I think it's really gutsy.
Yeah, and so I commend them for that gutsy move. I think it is gutsy. At the same time, I do feel robbed of, like, Kiki was a great character, and if that really is her end, we didn't even get to see, like, a final great scene for her. I would have loved to see Wes confront an actually mad, crazy Kiki. And same thing with Grace. Like, she never got to have a scene with Grace where she was full Kiki. And, I mean, I guess because we've had so many people die and then not be dead, I do hope that he stays dead. But I am kind of bummed. He was a great character.
It doesn't feel like a deserving end for a character this great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I will like what they do as much, considering now we still have 3 hours worth of television left.
Yeah. And we really are at the point where at least one of those episodes could have been cut. Like, we did not need 13. And certain stories just aren't meant to be 13 episodes. And I believe that MTV Scream, as for all of its issues, was 10. And that if it had been 13, it would have had a lot more issues.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Would have been a lot harder to watch. That's for sure. So I definitely am curious about where it'll go from here. I'm not ready to give up on, you know, hoping that it'll be like filler plus, you know, like I still have some hope that it'll be worth watching.
I hope it's at least fun. Like, I mean, this episode had a lot, did have a lot of what you could consider filler, but it was all fun. And so I don't have a huge issue with it. And so I hope the Black Friday thing is fun.
I hope they pull it off.
Yeah.
That's really all I can say about it. Yeah.
Let's great get into our...
It was a great cliffhanger.
Yeah, it was. It made me excited for next week. All right, so getting into our listener feedback stuff. If you want to be part of our listener feedback, you can do that a few ways. You can email us at thescreamcast@gmail.com. That's thescreamcast@gmail.com. Or you can send us a tweet at ScreamPod on Twitter. ScreamPod. Or you can go on the listener, what is it, like the contact us thing on thescreamcast.wordpress.com. Or you can leave us an iTunes review. We would love those. We haven't had one in a while. We have lots of nice ones, but we would like some more, please.
Or a rating.
Yes, ratings are good too.
Yes.
Would you like to read the first?
Yes,
tweet?
I would. So from Atmo Fierce, we have Tony Award winning actress Faith Prince as number 3's mom is giving me a nerdgasm. She's in The Last Dragon and Guys and Dolls on Broadway. I'm freaking Julia Duffy as Mrs. Radwell. Ryan Murphy is my pop culture twin. I love it. Yeah, this episode was chock full of like incredible actors, you know, doing like minor cameos. And we've had that a bit too with like number 2's parents.
Yeah.
Who else?
Fun, when you're Ryan Murphy, you can get some fun little cameos for sure.
You know, Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah.
As one of the brothers.
Brad, I believe.
Unfortunately, not Chad.
No.
and Patrick Schwarzenegger as the other one.
I would even sort of say number 3 herself, just as far as like the little connection there with her mom and everything.
I forget the name of the actor who plays number 3's dad, but he's also in a lot of stuff.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've seen him over the course of a few, you know, many years of showing up in things.
I can read the next tweet now.
Yes.
All right. So at Massalanian underscore says, I really enjoyed Chanel sticking up for Hester and them both deciding that they deserve better. But then it was kind of cheapened by Chanel taking Chad back like two seconds later.
This makes me so angry. I really can't describe.
Now, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that basically the arc of what this episode could have been will still end up being the arc, and that this is just a symptom of them having too many episodes and feeling like this is too soon, and that we'll probably just get a redo of this where it sticks, like in an episode or two?
Probably. Yeah. I think this will stick more so than the other Chanel revelations.
I would almost like it more if, like, Chanel was just killed and then, like, Chad ended up feeling bad about it and, like, trying to avenge her or something. I don't know. I don't think that will happen.
I don't know. But, I mean, it was just a disgusting moment where Chad comes back in the house to Kappa and Chanel's like, oh, Chad, you came back to apologize away from your awful family who were so mean to me. And he was like, no, my family is great. I'm here for the turkey. Wait, yeah. I shouldn't have said that. And she's like, like, no, you shouldn't have. But she takes him back. Like, that was just the shittiest moment. Well, like,
the thing is that this could have been a moment for Chad changing too. Because they could have had it be she finally stands up and it actually gets through and he legitimately apologizes. And then she's like, okay. Like, that I would have been okay with too, but he didn't grow, she didn't grow. It was just like I could have even been okay with him being like, my family's awesome, but the way they treated you wasn't awesome. Like,
I was
like
actually that. Expecting
like,
that.
Yeah. Like,
it would have been that one line. It's just a symptom of the show with editing. Just one line can make all the difference. Insert a line about Denise. Yeah. Change around the wording of it doesn't take away from characters. It's okay to give them, you know, logical structure and growth. It's perfectly healthy, as a matter of fact. Even in a cartoonish show, it just makes it look like they care about what they're putting out there.
Yeah, I agree.
And things like this, it drives me crazy. It feels sloppy.
Yeah.
I don't know. This really riled me up.
Yeah, no.
Which is one of the reasons I hated rewatching it. I knew this was coming.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing. Because when you're watching it the first time and Chanel has her big moment, you're like, this was a great plot line. Like, all the stuff with his parents were funny, and then she has a great moment. But when you're watching it a second time and you know that it all leads to nothingness, then it's like,
it's frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, calming down a bit. From Pigtunia New, I don't think we can rule out the possibility that Boone was the one born female either.
Yeah, so this is again coming back to where the big Pete discussion is, you know, and the Boone twist, I don't think that will be a thing because we already had his whole big diatribe about I had to pretend to be gay, I had to do this, I had to do that. I'm ruling it out personally, but you know, you never know.
You never know. I think it kind of just gets back to the big thing of like using the idea of people being trans as a twist, which we got into a lot in last week's episode.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just, you know, it doesn't help. It doesn't help the cause in any way.
Yes.
Not that it has to.
Well, no, I think it outright hurts the cause.
That's what I mean. Like, if you're not helping, at least don't hurt it.
Yes,
that's
exactly. Yeah, I'm not gonna attack any show that doesn't have a trans character for not helping the cause. But if you have one, use them well.
Right. In a way that makes sense and doesn't use them as a tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well. I'm team five should be the killer because I want to see that and it wouldn't be Pete. I'm currently, even though I feel like it would be hard to explain, I'm kind of team Wes and five as the killers.
I still want Zayday to be up to something.
Yeah, but at this point, I like have no idea what they could be, but who knows?
It is not my job to write this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very lazy way.
Zayday killed Coney and only Coney with the
chainsaw. That would be incredible. With the chainsaw. She just really hates mascots.
No, he, like, we know how he was, like, going around tucking people. Yes. Because, yeah, he tucked her, and she's like, nah, I don't have any of that. I'm going to chainsaw his ass. That's my...
That is a direct quote.
That's my headcanon. All right. What?
I'm going to put your head in a cannon.
Jeez. Put Gigi's head in a cannon. All right.
Gigi.
What about Gigi?
Poor Gigi.
I know. I'm going to miss her. She was good and stuff.
She was. Moment of silence at the end of this episode when you won't realize the podcast ends.
I did realize that there was something I wanted to specifically bring up this week, which is the idea of, do we want to predict who's next to go now that we're pretty sure we're down to a major character will probably die each week, I'm assuming, at this point. Who do you think will die? Or at least just generally, which of the main characters do you think will die next, even if it's not necessarily next episode?
I hate to say this.
Okay.
But I don't think that 3 is long for this world.
Interesting. 3. I can see 3. I could see Zayday. Who else is there? I guess Wes is not going to have anything. Chad won't have anything till like the finale. Chanel and Grace are fine. Pete's fine, I think. I guess if 5 isn't the killer, 5 could be easily next. And like, I don't think they're going to kill Hester again right after they almost killed Hester.
So, well, here's the thing. Next episode is called Black Friday. We have the Chanels trapped in a mall hunted by the Red Devil.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Then how can it be number 5? Don't we see her hunted by the Red Devil?
I have to recheck that promo, but I don't know.
Did we just answer our entire...
Well, I'm not 100% set on this is really the only person left.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Especially if maybe Gigi is still alive somehow.
Yeah.
She had an identical twin sister.
Oh, what about the Dean?
I don't think the Dean's going to die until the finale.
I mean, there are so many characters that we're saying can't die until the finale.
I think the Dean is one of them.
Yeah. All right.
Either she's going to die or she's going to be arrested.
I'm going to say 3. I'm going to say it's Zayday. You can say 3. And we'll see.
Yeah, maybe Denise. No, I don't think Denise will die next episode.
Well, the thing is that makes me not sure is that we had close calls recently with 5, Denise, and Hester. And so I feel like it can't be any of them because we just saw them get out of it.
Yeah, that's another thing. So I'm going to stick with number 3.
Okay. I'm going to say Zayday.
All right.
We'll see. Well, why don't you guys? You guys tweet in who you think will go next.
We would love to hear from you if you have any other commentary on things that we said or any other theories of your own.
Send us a lovely review about how great we are talking about fingering. And
also send us your personal experiences that you've had with Tinder. We'd love to hear... whether you had more of a number 3 experience or a Olga and Dan experience or anything in between.
Did you have a 3 experience? Are you doing a podcast with the person you are on your Tinder date with?
Aww.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. And I hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.